The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People with Aaron Ryan,
Bill Cundiff,
and Bob Martin.
Look at us. We're like a well-oiled machine.
The crew.
Well, we have two pastors with us today. We were going to be talking with Jake McCauley, and he suggested that we speak with Pastor David Whitney regarding the Convention of the States. He said he was more the expert. So for those of you who thought we were going to be speaking with Jake, he's coming in on the 20th. Well, okay, not coming in, but he'll be on the 20th. How's that? And
yeah, Convention of the States getting a lot of play nowadays.
I know. So we've got to find out. We've kind of thought it was a bad thing, but you know, now people are talking. It's interesting. The camps are splitting. Then the second hour, we are going to be speaking with a local pastor here, Guy Asherman. We've had him on before. You'll like him. He's a nice man. And just did a morality rally actually 2 weeks ago.
Could they get anybody to come?
Actually, it was really full. They had 300 people there.
Wow.
Yeah, people actually get it and are frustrated that the country's going sideways and talk about it every day, how
nuts things are going.
Well, and just in case you weren't sure, then another Planned Parenthood video comes out. And then
don't get me started on that.
Yeah, then you realize the devil's real.
Yeah, there is a moral problem here.
Yeah, so we'll be chatting about that and I suppose lots of other things in the second hour. So there you go. That's the big rundown. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So you have lots of information there. We usually post the archive of the show within a half hour, 40 minutes. Kind of depends on how our technology interacts with us. Sometimes faster, sometimes slower. But always Robert Exter does a nice commercial-free archive by the afternoon or early evening. And so if you want to send this to a friend, but you know they won't listen through the commercials, we all have those friends. I would be one of those friends. I won't listen to it if it takes too long. So just wait till the commercials zip out of it and then send it to them. And if you want more information about our guests and all that, it's on there as well. All right. Did I get all the housekeeping? Bob, anything?
I think you did anything? Well. Yeah, I think you did well. Let's move along.
Get like an 8 of that.
Nothing to see here.
Right. Classic. Okay, so Pastor Whitney is on the ball. He's already called us. He's on there waiting. He's been teaching the Christian heritage and history of our country with the Institute for the Constitution for over a decade, where he serves as a senior instructor, and he's also a radio host. Was on Stan Monteith's Radio Liberty. Stan passed away end of last year, I believe. So maybe he has reassigned. He's an honor scholar graduate from Rutgers with a master's in Denver from Denver Seminary. He's been a minister for 32 years, so pretty much anything that has anything to do with being a minister, he's probably seen it. He's been there and done that.
Yeah, got the T-shirt.
we're out flanked on that one. So, Pastor Whitney, what are you doing for radio these days?
Oh, thank you, Aaron and Bob. It's a pleasure to be on with you. Actually, that bio, I guess, is a little bit old because, yes, our good friend Dr. Stan. I was on the show with Dr. Stan for 10 years. Just a great hero, a great patriot, and a great Christian. I really miss Dr. Stan. We would spend at least 3 hours a month together on the radio. So Dr. Stan's a great friend who's now with the Lord. But doing a show with WFYL, just outside the Philadelphia area, actually very similar title to yours, We the People, but the subtitle is The Constitution Matters, and do that on Friday mornings at drive time, 7 a.m. And then a few other shows. This week is a particular busy one. I've got four different radio interviews lined up, and I appreciate people really desiring to know what's going on in our country and really get a grip on what our Constitution says about the matters of the day and what's happening with what our federal government is doing. And as we look at the details of the Constitution, we find that it is not a good picture what the federal government is doing, which I know is the reason motivating most people who are you know, interested in seeing a convention of the states take place, recognize we're in very bad shape as a country. And the Constitution's been twisted and contorted and violated and, well, shredded into the trash can in many aspects of what Washington, D.C. does on a daily basis.
Amen.
Yeah.
No, premature.
And with a constitutional convention, I think one of my biggest fears, if we moved in that direction, would be to find people of moral fiber to represent us at something like that.
Well, if we're not following it now,
yeah, I mean,
how will a constitutional
we've gone
convention
so far the wrong way?
Amen.
So what do you think about
all
that?
All of those are significant problems because we don't have people who share our founders' view of law and government. Just I make this a test that I ask anyone who asks for my vote. I ask them a very simple question that if they've studied the Declaration of Independence, they get the right answer to. If they haven't, they don't know it, they stumble around. But the question is this, what is the purpose of government? Pretty simple question, you'd think. Somebody running for office, that should be one of their first questions they know how to answer. Last guy I asked that, he said, well, you know, nobody has ever asked me that question before. And he had a deer in the headlights look, you know. It's like, if you don't know the purpose of government, why in the world are you running for office? And our founders answered it very simply with what we at the Institute on the Constitution call the American view. Just 3 points, real simple to remember. First, there is a Creator God. And, of course, that Creator God, our founder said, is the God of the Bible. It's not Allah, it's not Buddha, not something else. It's the God of the Bible. There's a Creator God. Secondly, our rights come from Him, Him alone, not from government. And then thirdly, the only purpose, the sole purpose of human civil government is to protect and secure those God-given rights, nothing else.
And so with all three of those kind of in jeopardy today, how do you proceed? Because we've thrown all that out, haven't we?
We have, and that's really why Institute on the Constitution exists, to train people in the founder's view of law and government, which is actually a biblical view, which is, as a pastor, my great passion, that people understand what God, the creator of the universe, structured for human civil government, and he did. And there's many people who lie and say, oh, the Bible doesn't say anything about government. Oh, no, it has a great deal to say about human civil government, what is just and unjust and so on. But to train people in that thinking, we've got a huge revolution that's taken place in our land where most people think more like Karl Marx about law and government than they do like Thomas Jefferson or James Madison or any of the founders. So I agree with your concern that if we were to hold a convention today, even if we took a rough sample of just the average person in the population and put them as a delegate to that convention, they would not hold our founders' view of law and government, and they would therefore not protect the God-given rights that we have already have been secured by our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. So we're not in a good state in which we could choose candidates for even a good convention were we able to do that.
Well, yeah, considering Bernie Sanders can fill a stadium, as a declared socialist, who would have ever thought that somebody running under a socialist label could run for president and draw a crowd?
This is part of the madness that's going on in this country.
I keep thinking people figure it out, but I guess they have and they like it.
I think most people don't realize what Margaret Thatcher said, socialism works until you run out of other people's money.
That's a classic quote. And I really don't think they realize that. I think they think it's just more free phones, free health care, everybody, you know, this whole idea of the living wage. I guess on Labor Day we should bring that up because that's always a big drumbeat. Everyone should be making $15 or $20 an hour, even if they're at McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah, every job you take should be enough to support you and your family and send your kids to college. It's just insane. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, actually, more from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who promised a second Bill of Rights, which he guaranteed all those. He said, Bill of Rights was, you know, okay, but it really isn't adequate. We need a second Bill of Rights in which he guaranteed health care for everybody, a remunerative job, good housing, and even a vacation. Imagine that. The president promised a vacation as one of your rights. Wow. Well, we're far down the rabbit hole. And I understand the passion of those who want to call for what I would prefer the constitutional term would be an Article 5 convention. The founder said there's two ways that the Constitution can be amended. One is that proposed amendments are put forward by both houses of Congress and then sent to the states. Three-quarters of the states need to ratify them. That's been done 27 times. Our 27 amendments to the Constitution have all been by that congressional route. The other route is that the states themselves, upon application, and I'm reading the exact words here of Article 5, upon application to the Congress, so the states are coming to the Congress, they're appealing to the Congress for this Article 5 convention. So when they make application of the state legislatures to the Congress, then Congress shall call, that's the wording, Congress shall call this convention. So what you look at the details there, Congress is in control of determining, okay, these applications have come in, and now these applications reach the required level, and they're approved, and Congress is the one that actually issues the call. And the other thing that it details that Congress does is once amendments are proposed, Congress determines the ratification process for those amendments. It could be the legislatures of the state actually ratify the proposed amendments, or it could be special conventions are held in each state to ratify the proposed amendments. So the details we have in Article 5 is the Congress is in basically control of all the details that are mentioned there with one exception, and that is the states make application to Congress. And that means the states, in my opinion, in my view here, have very little power over what actually takes place in that convention. They get the ball rolling, but beyond that, the whole process is really under the control of Congress. And so there's a whole lot of questions that our Constitution does not answer about that convention. For example, the issues of who shall call the delegates. Well, it doesn't really determine who picks the delegates and by what criteria are those delegates to be chosen and who instructs those delegates. We're being assured by the folks who are calling for this convention of the states, well, the states are going to be in control of this convention because they get to choose the delegates and they get to commission the delegates and they tell the delegates what they can do and what they cannot do. Well, that is not specified in Article 5. And so where's the meeting to be held? When is it to be held? How long will it last? None of those are answered by Article 5. But I would argue there is an answer for who's in charge of all those things, and that's Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. It begins, Article 1, Section 8, Congress shall have power, and then it goes through a list of 17 items there, making all laws necessary and proper. And the very last phrase, make all laws which are necessary and proper for the carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. I think the plain language means that if there's something that we've specified in this Constitution, but we have not worked out the details of it, we haven't laid it out in ink, that goes to Congress. And Congress has power to make those decisions on those issues where we have not laid out the details. And I've heard plenty of promises from those in the Convention of the States side that say, oh, no, that won't happen. We could be sure that won't happen.
Sure. We should roll the dice with it because that always works out well. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back and chat more with Pastor Whitney on the Convention of the States. You can join us online if you're on here Sunday between 12 and 2 on KCNR. We are live and there's a chat room up and ready for you. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, it's there. Mondays we're in Philadelphia, airing from 1 to 3, and that's an archived program. So either way, hope you join us. Be right back in 2 minutes.
Constitution. institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
Got a little Bernie Sanders rally promo in there. Get your Chairman Mao poster ready. Bernie's coming to town. You're listening.
You can't get Chairman Mao clothes anymore. Hillary owns them all.
Nice. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Pastor David Whitney. We're talking about the Convention of the States. Okay, so we were having a lively little chat in the chat room about the states choosing the delegates. And for those of us who are currently living in California, that's a super, super, super scary prospect. How would that work? Pastor Whitney, are you in there?
Well, the process, again, is not specified in the Constitution as to how that would work. The default mode, and by the way, Congress has done a little research. Congressional Research Service has come up with some statements about what they expect would happen. Again, we have never done a constitutional convention of this, Article 5 convention of this nature, so it's hard to know exactly how it would come about and what would take place, but the Congressional Research Service has basically said that, you know, unanswered things are probably in the hands of the Congress. Let me quote what they say on this is page 25 of the Congressional Research Service. No matter how many and how sincere are the assurances from the backers of the new convention that their sole concern is reapportionment, no one can safely assume that the delegates to such a convention, once safely seated and in action, would wish to go home without trying their hand at improving many parts of this delicately balanced document. So even the Congressional Research Service says, look out. If this convention actually happens, they might do a lot more monkeying around with the Constitution than what you send them supposedly to accomplish. So while we don't know the exact how it would work out in terms of the delegates being chosen, let's look at what happened with our own Constitutional Convention in 1787. The states thought they were in control of what was going to happen in Philadelphia. In fact, they were very specific in their instructions to the delegates they sent. Virginia's instructions were for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. We remember the federal constitution at this point before our current constitution was the Articles of Confederation. All the states, only 12 states sent delegates, all the states had similar language that basically said, the purpose, delegate, we are sending you to Philadelphia is to revise the Articles of Confederation. Some were even more specific and said, you can't do this. Massachusetts is one that said, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do the other thing in revising the Articles of Confederation. You can only do what we tell you to do. Well, what happened? They arrived, and the very first thing they voted on was to make all the proceedings secret. So if the states thought they were going to be in control of what was happening there in Philadelphia, their communication was immediately cut off, and nobody could know what was happening inside those closed doors in Philadelphia. There was no reporters present. There was nobody allowed to take the information and let the states know what was taking place.
And is there anything to say that that wouldn't happen or wouldn't go that way again?
Exactly. That's my argument, is likely once they meet, they're not in control, or the states are not in control of what their delegates actually do, and the delegates at the convention there in Philadelphia did something entirely different than what their state delegated them to do. But we're told by the Convention of the States, don't worry about that, that can't happen today. And my argument is, no, you really don't understand what a convention is. National conventions, when they gather, because they are commissioned by the people, our commission to do is, as our Declaration of Independence clearly states, if they find that the government is inadequate to meet the needs, a government is inadequate to secure the God-given rights of the people, they have the right to alter or to abolish that government and propose a new government. And that's happened twice in our history. It happened in 1776. They were a convention when they met in Philadelphia in 1776, and they said, we're no longer part of Great Britain. We are separating from Great Britain. We are declaring independence. That government is no longer our government. What happened as a result of the convention in 1776 was a brand new government emerged from those halls in Philadelphia. Same thing in 1787. They went down, told, revise the existing government, the Articles of Confederation. They went down and they completely altered it, proposed a brand new government, and the constitution that came out at the 1787 was a new government from the previous government under the Articles of Confederation. And you look at English history. All such conventions, the Long Parliament that met in 1640, the Convention of Parliament in 1660, and the Convention of Parliament in 1688, when these conventions met, every single time they produced a brand new government came out of those conventions. And so the assurance we have from history is the likelihood of the five instances in history I just cited is that if we had another one of those conventions, it would wind up producing a brand new government. The states cannot control what their delegates do once they meet there.
Now, you say every time it produced a brand new government. In what respect was it brand new? Was it a completely different representation? I mean, what were the changes that were made?
Well, in 1776, we know the Continental Congress abolished the government of the colonies under King George III. That entire relationship and that entire system of government was done away with, no longer a monarchy. It was a constitutional republic under the Articles of Confederation. Go back in English history. Let me just pick the one of 1688. Before 1688, the king was kind of tyrannical, and the kings believed in the divine right of kings. Whatever came out of the king's mouth, that was law. But in 1688, Parliament said, here's an Englishman's Bill of Rights, and they made a contract with King William. King William, if you will sign this Englishman's Bill of Rights, then you can become king of our country. If you will not sign it, you will not be king of our country. So they instituted a constitutional monarchy where the king was bound to obey the Englishman's Bill of Rights. The king was limited. He was not divine right of kings, which is what the government before that had been. So in these instances, we have a brand new government, although there is connections, obviously, with the previous government, just as our Philadelphia Convention of 1787. It produced a brand new government, different in many respects from the Articles of Confederation, even though it retained some elements of that. Obviously, there's a legislative branch. That was the only thing, really, the Articles of Confederation had. It did not have a president, no executive branch, no federal judicial branch under the Articles of Confederation. So they added two new branches of government, and they took what was one house, the legislative branch only had one house in the Articles, and they made a bicameral two-house legislature, both House and Senate. You know, there is some connection, but boy, it's a very different thing that they came up with in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a big change.
It's a huge change. So, okay, going forward, how do you, you know, when people are all touting, well, this is the only way we can, you know, save the Constitution is we have to have this convention. What is something that's worked for you to walk people back, or is it just kind of an ideological thing? And
no, there is power that we have. Let me talk about two things that we need to understand that are part of our English common law history as well as American common law history. The first is nullification. That is, the legislature passes a bill, and so they're spilling some ink on a piece of paper, and they say, this is law. The executive branch, we say, signs it into law. And then the judicial branch comes along and says, oh, yeah, that's legal, that's constitutional, that's law. Three branches of government have called it law, but it is not law. It can be nullified by lower levels of government, nullified at the state level, nullified at the county level, or even down at the very, very local level. You as an individual citizen have a power that the courts will never tell you about. And that is when you sit on a jury. Our founders defined a jury as a body of citizens that do two things. They judge the law and they judge the facts. Before they judge the facts, they have to judge whether the law is legitimate law or not. That is, does it comport with the Constitution? And does it comport with the laws of nature and nature's God? If it's a law that says two men can marry, sorry, that doesn't comport with the laws of nature and nature's God. Therefore, it is not law, and a jury can nullify it and say, sorry, in this case, this person is not guilty or innocent. This case is thrown out because the law is being judged, and we judge that the law is wrong. The law is not law at all. So nullification can happen on that local level of a jury. Nullification should happen for every elected official. They examine what the Constitution says. They have a constitutional view of government. And when a law, quote-unquote, is handed down, they respond in a way as to whether they really understand it to be law or not to be law. For example, what's happening in Kentucky is a good illustration of this.
Yeah.
My friend Michael Peruca, a co-founder of Institute on the Constitution, was just out there yesterday, spoke at the rally, and he made this clear statement. Judges and courts do not make law. They're not the legislative branch. They do not make law. So whatever it is that they spilled on ink there at the Supreme Court, saying two men can marry, whatever it is, it's not law. Therefore, you cannot put this clerk in prison for violating a law that's not a law. She did not violate any law whatsoever. And so his exhortation to the local officials there, the sheriff, and the mayor of that town, as well as the elected, I understand they elect their prison, the head of their prison system, the head of the correction, is elected official. These elected officials, they swear an oath to the Constitution, and they've been told to put this girl in prison and keep her in prison because somehow she's violated the law. Well, if they do their duty, their oath is not to obey a tyrant wearing a black robe. No, their duty is to obey the law, and that tyrant wearing the black robe is not the law. So that tyrant says, put her in prison, and they could nullify that, say, or interpose. That's the second thing. Interpose, saying, we know it's not law. That's nullification. Interposition then says, we're not going to allow you to abuse the power you have and abuse the God-given rights of the citizens in our jurisdiction by applying something that is not law in our county or in our jail. Kim Davis should be set free by the sheriff, the jailer, and the mayor of that town because what has been commanded of them is not law, but they don't know their duty to interpose when unlaw is attempted to be forced upon the citizens of their county, including Kim Davis here.
But see, that's where we've gone down this road so far. How do we come back from that? Because right now judges are making law and our government is enforcing it. So how do we step back from that?
And that's where what we're doing at Institute on the Constitution is designed to educate citizens on an American view, what we call the American view of law and government. What is our founders designed our constitutional republic to be? What is the meaning of the text of the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and subsequent amendments? So we offer courses that are actually conducted all over the country. I know that there's some south of you guys there in Reading, down in the Sutter Buttes area that are being conducted right now. We offer courses because we know that Americans have been lied to successfully by their schools, both, grade school all the way up through college and graduate school. They've been lied to by the media incessantly about these things. And the lies have to be countered with the truth. And the truth is very simple when you look at what our founders designed. We have far strayed from that. And until we gain a ground with enough Americans to restore that, there's no silver bullet. The Convention of the States is not a silver bullet, and it wouldn't only work if we had a majority of Americans who held our founders' view of law and government.
Okay. So, but at this point, we still have to get past the judges, because you can stand up and bang on that, but you're still going to stand before a judge who's going to rule against you.
Let's talk about how that really works, David. We've got to take a really quick break here, but if we all lived in Kentucky, let's pretend, if we all lived in Kentucky, who would actually do what, and how would that work? Because sometimes it's hard to apply a theory that you've never seen actually carried out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what that sort of looks like. Anyway, we'll be right back. We're chatting with Pastor David Whitney here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Look down upon me, Jesus. You gotta help me make a stand. You just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way.
Welcome back.
Oh, I've seen fire.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Pastor David Whitney, chatting about the Convention of the States. Okay, so in the case of Kim Davis, Pastor Whitney, how would that actually work? Like, who are the players and what do they do?
Players are the ones that, at the most significant level, of course, are the county players, which would include the sheriff, who is duly elected by the people. He swears an oath to the U.S. Constitution. He swears an oath to the state constitution. And if they have a county document, like a charter or whatever, he swears an oath to that as well. He is swearing an oath not to obey what some judge says, but to obey what the Constitution says. So in that case, what he should do with the command that he imprisoned, Davis, is that he would not do that, and he would protect her from any federal, federal goons. Our founders never, ever, ever designed for the federal government to have any police powers whatsoever. The chief law enforcement officer at the level of the county is the sheriff, and he is the highest law enforcement officer in the county, period. That is, the FBI has no greater authority than the sheriff, nor any other federal agency, EPA, any federal agency that comes into, including the IRS, is beneath the sheriff. They can only do action in the county if the sheriff gives them permission to do so. So the sheriff should be the one who protects Kim Davis in that county from an attack that comes from the federal judiciary that may be backed up by some federal goons that come into their district. An illustration where this failed in the sense of the sheriff doing his duty was out at Bundy Ranch. You probably remember the details of that. Had the county sheriff done his duty, he would have prevented the BTFE and all the other goons that arrived there in Clark County. He would have prevented them from doing anything in Clark County. He would have driven them out. But instead, the sheriff was in full cooperation with the feds to attack the Bundys.
But see, that's the issue now with pretty much every state out there, is they have relinquished their state power and allowed the federal government to come in because the federal government carries such a big stick as far as, you know, all this money they give the states for just about every department. They don't want to risk, you know, making Big Brother mad, so they let them come in and do that. And I think that's kind of where it's all kind of starting to fall apart, isn't it?
In other words, the states and the counties have been bribed by the federal government to surrender their constitutionally sworn duties to protect their citizens from the federal tyrant of Washington, D.C.
Yep, that's exactly right. They can no longer afford not to take the money to support all the programs, much of which are federally mandated, and so if they don't have the money, then more problems.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think it has to start at the local level. And by the way, there are sheriffs gathering who are constitutional sheriffs. Perhaps you've heard of CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Sheriff Richard Mack leading that organization of training sheriffs in their constitutional duties. They are a growing number, more than 1,000 now, and that's about 3,000 jurisdictions across the country. 1,000 have signed on and said, yes, I want to be a constitutional sheriff. And they do face a challenge because, indeed, they are being bribed with money from Washington, D.C., but if they can be persuaded by their citizens, don't accept that money. Refuse those grants. Don't take the tanks that the federal government wants to give you, and don't take the machine guns the federal government wants to give you. We'd rather have you have less equipment but protect our God-given rights. But the citizens have to stand behind such an elected sheriff and not only vote him in, but be willing to support him as his posse should push ever come to shove with the federal tyrants.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And you know, you could go a step further. Because a lot of these sheriffs are totally controlled by the county board of supervisors. You know, they're going to control their budget. So, you know, we have to kind of put our foot down at that level as well in order to keep a good sheriff. Otherwise, he's gone.
we had an excellent constitutional sheriff just in our neighboring state here in Delaware, in Sussex County. Sheriff Jeff Christopher stood on the right principles, but he was not reelected. He lost in the primary because the people of his county were not aware enough, they were not constitutionally trained enough, that they would recognize, we want a constitutional sheriff, even though it may cost us. We want that more than we want whatever is offered up as the standard sheriff who does whatever the federal government does. So it really begins with the education of the people, that enough of the populace is educated that they can not only secure a constitutional sheriff, but keep him in office to protect their God-given rights from the tyrannical federal government.
Well, has anybody talked to the sheriff? I'm assuming they have, and I just haven't followed it close enough, in Kim Davis's county?
Yes, actually, my friend Michael Peruca spoke, not, I don't think directly, but spoke in terms of the audience, and the sheriff, as well as the mayor, as well as the jailer, were all there present. In fact, they were some of the speakers who I think were part of that event yesterday. And so he clearly declared to them, they need to set Kim Davis free because she is illegally put into prison. There is no law. She didn't break any law. There is no law. Judges don't make law. The Supreme Court didn't make a law. She's been put in prison for not violating anything. She did not violate any law whatsoever. She didn't do what a black-robed lawyer told her to do, but that black-robed lawyer doesn't have any jurisdiction or power to tell her what to do in her job. So he was exhorting the sheriff there to go there, get your keys, unlock it, let her out in violation and direct defiance of the federal tyrants. Show the federal tyrants, we the people of the United States will not submit to your tyranny any more than our founders submitted to the tyranny of King George III.
Yeah, because I think where it gets all wrapped around the axle is it comes down from court, and then you always hear, it's the law of the land, you know, that seems to be the big battle cry.
Yeah, they ruled on it. The judges
yep,
all ruled on it, so now
land.
It's the law
so
of the land.
Everybody has to, you know, it can't be changed. It must be right, and everybody just better go along.
Well, you know, that's easy to answer because you just open the Constitution and read the very first sentence. First sentence, that is, after the preamble, that first sentence is, all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in a Congress. All legislative power, that is, the only branch of government that makes law is the legislative branch. Judges do not make law. The only thing they do is an opinion. By the way, every court, when they put out whatever their opinion is, it says right at the top of the page there, opinion, opinion of the Supreme Court. It's not law, it's an opinion, and it's not binding on anyone except the parties that have come into the courtroom. For example, Roe v. Wade is not the law of the land. It is a court opinion that binds only two people, Roe and Wade, nobody else. But again, we've been lied to so successfully in America that most Americans believe Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. No, it's not. In fact, it can be challenged by any state that chooses to challenge it, any county that chooses to challenge it. We're trying to drive Planned Parenthood out of our county, and I hope by God's grace we will succeed in doing so, at least in our county. We'll be a murder-free zone for babies in this wicked state of Maryland. But, I mean, any county could do that, as well as any state could end abortion within their boundaries. They have the jurisdiction to do that. Roe v. Wade only binds Roe and Wade. It does not bind anyone else.
Wow. Seems amazing that that's gone on for, I don't know when that actually happened, but all these years, what, 50 years or something?
And 60 million dead babies.
Yeah, no mm-hmm. kidding. Well, on that cheerful note, hang on just a it's like, well, awkward silence. I guess we'll take a break. We just have one more before the top of the hour. We'll be back with Pastor David Whitney. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
New Year's Eve was the final barrier. Dominant submission.
Radio's appear.
Took you up and we put you in the backseat.
Dominant
submission.
Radios appear.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture.
Dominant
submission.
Radios appear.
Dominant submission.
Dominant
submission.
Dominant
submission.
Just
Okay, because the Constitutional Convention, we are going to get fooled again, huh? Pastor Whitney?
That's the sad reality. If there is a convention, it's likely that we're going to lose more rights than we already have secured by the Constitution. What needs to happen, really, is an education of Americans so that the citizens at the grassroots level, they know what the Constitution says, and they resist and only elect people, first of all, who are constitutionalists, truly to the tune of our founders, not what the modern judges say the Constitution means, but what our founders said. And that really begins with educating ourselves, which is why I invite folks to go to our website, theamericanview.com, theamericanview.com, and there's plenty of course materials available there, and we offer things online. I'm going to be teaching on the Constitutional Convention question this Friday. Of course, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon your time, but anyway, if people want to view that live, and again, we have many materials available that can help people learn what our founders said. And again, the course is designed to be done by any citizen anywhere without any expertise, history, background. You can put the course on in your community, even if it's just in your own living room. But if you begin to train people in your jurisdiction, then those people can influence who gets elected. And if you can elect constitutional people, the sheriff being the most important, but all the people at the local level, you can begin to push back tyranny that comes down from the federal, as well as in your case, obviously Sacramento is a tyrant of gargantuan proportions.
Well, you've heard about them, have you?
Tyranny. Yes, I was actually out there in April down in the Sutter Buttes area and talked to many, many residents who were very, very upset with the water issues, and on it goes with the tyranny that comes in from Sacramento.
Yeah, they're a whole different special kind of tyranny. it just never ends. You know, we've got water boards and just
air boards.
And we've got more air boards. I mean, people think the EPA is bad. You know, California has a whole other team that plays background. I guess it's more like a band. They we have
bad music, though.
Yeah, we have a lot of background singers for the EPA here. Frustrating, actually. I joke about it, but that's just because pulling out our hair is kind of pointless. But
and talking with the folks there who want to form the state of Jefferson, I applauded them that, you know, if you can accomplish that, I guess the problem is Sacramento is going to stand in your way. You might call out the Pharaoh like Moses, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh stands there and says, "No way, not until hell freezes over will I let you people go," because that's what tyrants do. But there may be other ways, in addition to pushing to develop the state of Jefferson, that you can, on a local county level, push back tyranny, whether it's a state or federal tyranny.
Well, you keep thinking that eventually people are going to figure this out. We have a guy on next week. We're going to be talking about some of these land and mineral and water grabs being done by the tribes, by the Indian tribes. They're being used as pawns. There was a big decision that came down yesterday in Montana. Just devastating. So if people who live in the city, they want their property rights. You know, they don't want somebody coming in and saying, "Oh, well, you know, I think we'll take your house because we think it's we're going to give this time immemorial right to some Native American." I think people haven't fully grasped where this is going.
And it's time to wake up because it's a very late hour, and the tyrant thinks he's got it all sewn up. But the thing that's encouraging to me, I've been, you know, for 15 years teaching with Institute on the Constitution, the thing that's encouraging to me is more and more Americans are recognizing something is desperately wrong, which is probably why Donald Trump is doing so well. People are desperate for any answer to the disaster that they see around them. And the answer is really simple. It goes back to the Constitution, back to our founders' view of law and government, back to the principles of the Declaration of Independence. If we can train enough people in these principles, the tyrants are a minority. We can overwhelm them. The majority of Americans don't want this, and they're sick and tired of it. And now they're beginning to be awoken by the very egregious things that the federal tyrant as well as the state tyrants are doing at this point.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that's why Donald Trump is getting the reviews he's getting, is he's saying all the things that people want to hear, and he's promoting the opposite of what our government is promoting, and people are so fed up with the direction our country's going, they're gonna take anything that goes against, you know, against the direction we're going right now, right, wrong, or indifferent, unfortunately, and that's really not a good thing either.
Right, which is why we need to get back to the plan of our founders. I mean, Donald Trump has some good things, but I haven't heard a whole lot of talk other than the 14th Amendment, which I appreciated. The anchor babies is absolutely a violation of what the 14th Amendment says, and that's a whole other talk.
You have a good article about that, though. We linked it.
Yes, that's on our website. Thank you, because people need to realize that our founders, or those who crafted the 14th Amendment, never intended anchor babies at all, period. But if we get back to our founders' plan, we can restore liberty. And I think that's the message we need to get out to people who are desperate and feel it's hopeless. The best hope we have is to recover our founders' view of law and government, and it can be done. We've provided the tools, and again, that's why I would encourage people to get to our website, theamericanview.com. We have the tools that can help you not only train yourself, train your family, train all your friends and neighbors, get into your church and train everybody at your church. We can do this, but it's going to take the grassroots, because we've got the media stacked against us, the entire educational establishment stacked against us, state governments, federal government, all these people are stacked against us. The people on the grassroots, though, can still take America back. Our Constitution is still the law of the land, in spite of the violations that daily take place in Washington, D.C. and in our state capitals. The law of the land is not being enforced because we, the people, have stepped aside and stopped enforcing it. That's where the problem lies.
Exactly. Pastor David Whitney, that was the fastest hour ever.
Oh,
thanks
boy.
A million.
Thank
zillion.
You so much for being on.
Pleasure. It's a pleasure to be
We'd
with you guys.
Love to have you
Thank
again.
You so much.
Well, happy Sunday
to
you. Thanks for popping in.
All right. God bless.
Bye. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.